My name is Carla Lewis, and I'm the Gainesboro Branch Manager, and I have with me today Fola Dickey. Today is July the 17th, 2008, and I will start my interview right now. Okay, Fola, would you like me to call you Fola or Ms. Dickey?
Fola will be fine.
Fola, okay. Fola, where were you born and where?
I was born April 3rd, 1926, in Hiawatha, West Virginia.
Okay. How long did you live there?
Approximately 2 years.
Okay. And then where did you move after that?
Moved to Roanoke, Virginia.
Okay. So that was approximately 1922? 2 years after that? Okay.
But that would have been
28.
28.
I was born in 26.
26. Okay. So that's 1928. You moved to Roanoke. And what street did you move to?
Moved to Fairfax Avenue, 606 Fairfax Avenue, Northwest.
Okay. Was that considered any neighborhood, like the Gainesboro neighborhood or the Fairfax neighborhood? Did they have a name for that neighborhood?
It didn't have a name associated with it at that time.
Okay. Tell me about your parents and your brothers and your sisters.
My father was a West Virginian and worked in the coal mines for a brief period of time. Then he married my mother, who was a school teacher, and she was from Roanoke. And that's how they wound up here.
Okay, can you tell me your mother's name?
It was Mary Rayford, and she married my dad, and he was McCrae.
And do you have any brothers and sisters?
I had one brother, and he was John McCrae, and I had three sisters, Gilly, Doris, and Audrey. Or it really should have been Gilly, Audrey, and Doris. Doris was the youngest.
Okay. Did you have an extended family? Aunts, uncles, cousins?
Yes, I did. I did have an extended family. My mother had sisters. My dad was an only child.
Okay.
And of course, as a result, I've had nieces and nephews and cousins. Many of them, most of them have already passed away.
Okay. Did they live nearby when you first...
Some of them did, yes.
Okay.
And my grandmother and grandfather lived on, they were Sherman and Gilly Rayford. They lived on Fairfax Avenue on the corner of Fairfax down the hill from Harrison Avenue. The house is no longer there.
Okay. Describe your house when you first came here. Describe what it looked like. You said it's not there anymore, but...
No, that's not there anymore either. It was a two-story house. And I don't think it had too much of a yard, but I remember very wonderful memories there.
Was
it a... to play school. I was always the teacher, and I would play school with my sister and my brother, my sisters and my brother, and if cousins happened to be along. And then, of course, when they would get a question correct, they would have to go to the next step, and that's how they would graduate.
Okay, very good.
I was always a teacher until I got to the point where I realized that I didn't have the patience to be a teacher. So I took that out of my category.
Did you? Okay. Did you have a garden near your house?
Not that I can recall.
Okay.
I do remember my dad ringing the next off of chickens.
Okay.
And they would be fluttering about in the yard. And my brother was afraid of the chickens. And my mother, I remember her making root beer and how it would help her to cap the bottles. I remember her doing that. She was an excellent cook.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked, when she gave up teaching school, I guess after she started having the children, she's taught in the country. And when she no longer did that, she used to work out in service and for people. And I was always had to be the mother then, because I had the younger sisters and then I had my brother. He was 1 year older than I.
Okay.
So I've always been a mother, really.
Okay. All righty. David, you are nodding your head. David is here with his mother. And when they talked about the good cooking, I heard him say, mm-hmm. So David, would you like to just speak a little bit about the cooking? Can you remember some of the things that they baked, or the smell, the aroma that came out of that kitchen?
Well, I always remember the smell of my grandmother's rolls, homemade rolls, and her cakes. She made excellent cakes. And I mean, everything she cooked was good, but those are the two things I remember the most. And then I'd reach for a roll and she'd slap my hand and say, "That's not for you, boy."
Okay.
And my mother inherited all her good cooking qualities also.
Oh, wonderful.
My mother was a cook at First National Bank downtown Roanoke when they had the cafeteria. She was a cook there.
Okay.
For a number of years until they discontinued it.
Okay, wonderful. Okay. I was going to ask, what kind of activities did you do, and were there any other kind of jobs? But I'll get to the jobs in just a few minutes. But what other kind of activities? I know you said you played teacher, and you was always the teacher, and you taught everybody else.
I jumped rope. I played hopscotch. I played jacks.
Okay. Was that
they
on your sidewalk?
They were always fun things that we did, and we never ran out of things to do. I helped my brother fly his kite, and we just had a great time.
Great. Okay, you elaborated a little bit on your mother and your father's job. Could you tell me a little bit about what they did? You said your mother was a teacher. Was she a teacher when she came here too?
Well, she grew up in Roanoke. My father, I don't know really how he met her or where he met her. Must have been here. But she was a Roanoker.
Okay.
Born and bred. And as I said, she taught in the country, in the rural area. I guess a one-room schoolhouse.
Okay, so she taught all subjects.
Yes, she did. Mm-hmm. And I used to have pictures of her in her... she graduated from Virginia. Virginia Seminary and College, I believe it was, where she went. And then she met my father, and they got married. And my father was quite a handsome man. He used to work for the Oak Hall Company in downtown Roanoke. And I used to go down there with him. And I was always, I guess, rather outgoing, because they would have me to recite for them. And my father and mother once worked at Craig Healing Springs. That's somewhere in Virginia. I don't suppose it's too far away from this locality. But I used to go with them when I was a little girl. And I would recite, and the people would give me money, and we'd put it in a baking powder can, and I would come back home with a can full of money. Mm-hmm. And I used to recite a poem, "Little Fly on the Wall, Ain't You Got No Clothes at All?" And then, "Ain't You Cold?" And they liked that a lot.
Do you know any of the other lines?
I don't think so, not for that one, but I was always reciting. And I would always get the longest poems to recite when I was in school.
Very good. Okay, where did you go to elementary school and high school and college?
Went to Harrison Elementary School. It was right up the hill from where we lived. The snow would be very, very deep. My dad would break the path and I would go in his footsteps up to the school. We had big snows then. They didn't close schools.
Not
we
like
got
they
to school.
Do today.
No, the first drop and they close them here. But no, we went to school, and I would wet my hair in the morning, and I would get to school, and icicles would be hanging from my head. But I never had a cold. I was never sick. I was never sick. And the first day that I went to school, I was skipped two grades because I could read them. This was during the John Dillinger era. And I used to read the newspaper to my mother while she was be ironing or cooking after she came home from work, and she would ask me to read her about John Dillinger. And the teacher said I could read better than she could. So they promoted me. They skipped me two grades. So I started out in the high second instead of the first grade. I went past my brother. He had already started school. But I went past him, and I started off in the high second grade at Harrison.
And how far did you go? What grade did you complete? The first, second, third, fourth, fifth?
I finished, I suppose it only went to, I don't know how, they don't have it like middle school like they have it today.
Probably went to
they
the
just
sixth.
Went through, I guess, to the seventh grade. And then I went to high school. I went to Lucy Addison High School. And I graduated from there in 41.
Did you continue to college?
No. I'll tell you why. Well, one reason why. I met my husband in the interim there and met him in 1941. He was a traveling salesman for the Seventh-day Adventist religious group. And he stopped by my house on a February morning. It was very cold. He knocked on the door, and I went to the door. And he told me, you know, his name. And then he said, well, you could ask me in while I explain my business to you. Well, I was a little bit taken aback because I was always told, you know, I was home alone and you don't let strange people, you know, in the house. But I was so taken aback by what he said, I said, oh, well, come in and come back where it's warm. And he said, that's very hospitable of you. I remember his exact words to this day. That was 65 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we went in, and the stove was a little coal stove in the den. And he asked me my age. He asked me if I was in school, and I told him, yes, I'd be graduating that June. And he said, and what are you going to do when you finish school? I said, oh, I'm going to college. And he said, oh, you're much too young to go to college. And he said, how are you going? I said, well, I'm going to work my way through. And he said, you're much too young to think of working your way through. And the tears came down and sizzled on the stove because, I mean, I thought my dreams were just shattered then, you know, by him saying that. But I never regretted it. But I didn't go. I was only 15 when I graduated from high school. I was 15 that April and I was graduated that June. So I was really just 15. But he told me that my vocabulary was very good and was very articulate. And he complimented me and everything. He gave me a book. It was called Steps to Christ. It was written by one of the Seventh-day Adventist people, a lady. And well, his purpose was to sell the books, but of course he gave me that because he could see I was very poor, which I was. I was poor. But anyway, that's how I came to meet my husband. And that same year, he wasn't even here for my graduation because then he went to Petersburg. And then he was drafted, and I didn't see him anymore until I was 18. We corresponded. I sent him care packages and letters, and he would write me 15 and 16 page letters. Very beautiful, encouraging letters. He was very smart, very, very intelligent. And So then I went to live with my dad in New York because he and my mother had divorced. So my father preceded me there, and then I went to live with him because I felt like he needed me more than my mother did. And lived in Greenwich Village in New York when I first went up there on Perry Street. Then I got a phone call one day, and my husband was telling me that he was back in the States and he was on his way to New York. I mean, yes, and I was working, but I quit the job. Like he was just gonna magically materialize right there. So I quit my job just to sit down and wait for him to get there. So when the phone call came, he was at Penn Station. So of course I took the subway to Penn Station and met him there. And 7 days later we got married. But all of our courtship was via mail. He sent me the V letters, and plus all the long letters, lengthy letters that he wrote. And I would write him just about every day. And that's how we established a wonderful relationship.
And how long were you married to
62 this? Years.
So it was well worth it.
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, that's beautiful. Okay. Describe your home life with your children.
Well, I like to think it was good, you know, ups and downs sometimes, especially with my daughters.
So did you move back to Roanoke at this time?
Oh, no, no. I had four children born in New York.
Okay.
My youngest daughter was the only one born here in Roanoke.
Okay.
She is going to be 52. In September.
Okay.
But my oldest son, the one who died in infancy at 3 weeks, Roger, was my firstborn. Then Pamela was my second. Then there was David, and then Robin. They were all born in New York.
Okay.
And of course, I worked in New York. I worked for the Anya Index Company people, and I worked, I ran a draft board in New York. This was still during the war. It wasn't quite over, but I ran a draft board, and when I first went to New York when I was 16, I worked for the government. I worked for the New York Adjutant General Depot, and I was a messenger because I was too young to be almost anything else, you know. I wasn't grown yet. I was still considered a child, but I worked for the government at that time, and I worked for the government with in decorations and awards. This was too when I was in New York. I worked one day at Chock Full of Nuts in the Wall Street area of New York. One day, because it was a big place, and I didn't mind preparing the food. The slogan was, our hands never touched the food, which was really true. You didn't touch the food. You didn't wear gloves either, like some places now handle with the plastic gloves. We had the utensils that we would use. They featured hot dogs, wonderful, wonderful hot dogs, a chock full of nuts. And you would, you know, use the utensil and pick up their roll and put the bun in and everything. Your hands didn't touch. It was a good experience. But at the end of the day, they expected us to get down and wipe off all the bottoms of the stools, you know. The tops, but you had to wash all the legs down. So after one day, I said, no, I don't think so. I don't think this is for me at all. And I don't remember ever getting my money for it. I don't remember if I ever did. I never went back.
I want to interject here.
Okay, David.
My oldest brother, my mother and father's firstborn, was born in a house that was really unfit to live in, right?
It was a basement apartment, in an apartment building. My father was a caretaker there, superintendent they would call. And we had to go through where they had the stove and the coal. It was a coal furnace that had to be stoked and everything. And so we first, it was very difficult when my husband came out of the service, even in New York. It was difficult to find an apartment if you were an African American. We call about one, then when we go there, it had automatically been rented. So then my father told us about this basement place, you know. It had doors and everything, but my husband had to build a floor. The floor was all out. I was pregnant at the time. So he had to build a floor. He had to paint. He had to plaster. I mean, he did all of these things. He had no prior knowledge of how to do these things, but he knew how to marry the boards, you know, that they could fit in and everything. So he made it habitable in that sense, you know, that we could stay there. But the baby got a cold. People would come and see the baby and put money in the baby's hand and everything, you know. And I was young, I didn't know then what I know today and what I learned afterwards. But somehow he got a germ. And I took him to the pediatrician right away and he said, oh, you have a fine, healthy baby. I'm gonna give him something to knock the cold out. So he gave him some penicillin, but oral penicillin. And he told me, he says, then every 4 hours, and you know, you crush up the tablet and you know, you give it to the baby. So I got the medicine and went home and put him down and then set the alarm and went in to give him his medicine, and I put my arm under his head and everything. And then I had to call my husband. I said, honey, I said, I can't get the baby to take his medicine. Well, he took one look at the baby and he knew the baby was dead. I mean, he was dead just that quickly. So when I had my next child, Pam, and I was living out in Long Island, and the doctor, you know, they always ask if you have other siblings of children. And I told him about Roger, and he said that doctor should never have given him oral penicillin. He said because it lost its power before it even got into the stomach. He said he should have given him an injection. And that's what, you know, doctors don't usually talk about each other, but that's what he said. That's what happened.
But then they end up condemning the building, right, after that?
I don't recall that.
I thought Daddy
they
told
might
me.
Have, maybe, yeah. Maybe so, after we had moved out. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they had professional people living in the building itself, you know, upstairs in the other areas. Because we had met some friends there. I mean, made friends with some of the people who lived there. But that was the story about Roger and how he came not to be, you know. Because he would have been about 61 years old had he lived. He would have been a year older than my daughter, who's 60, than Pam. You know Pam, don't you? Yeah, I thought you might have known her.
I sure do.
Yes.
But my father built a glass enclosed room for Pam and wouldn't let anybody go in there but my mother.
Yeah, after the fact. Yes, he did. He would go in and to sanitize it each time, and then I had a kitty coop for her where you had the top to come over that was net and you could see through. And but until she was about 3 months old, we didn't let in. If they wanted to see her, they looked through the glass like they were in the hospital. So she considered herself very special with a capital S. Very special because of all of that attention that was given to her then, which we did because you don't want to lose another child. It's a very traumatic experience.
So, and then you came back to Roanoke?
Well.
At that time?
No. We kept in New York.
Okay.
We lived in Rockaway, okay. New York. And I got word of my father's death when I lived there, because my father developed cancer of the lung. And when I was living in Washington Heights, New York, at that time, I took him to the hospital, and the doctor did a biopsy and said that, you know, it had already eaten through two ribs or whatever. Because the first thing he asked my father was, how long have you had that lump? And he couldn't really say it. So he was not a person to go to the doctor. So then he told me, the doctor said, well, you know, he had cancer. And he says, we're not going to tell him. And I never told him. He died not knowing what it was. He would say he was in a hospital for 2 years. And he would say, well, you know, all these doctors and nurses, and they don't know what's wrong with me. I felt so badly, but then I didn't want to tell him, you know. So this particular day, my neighbor, I didn't have a phone in Rockaway.
You didn't have a cell phone?
Yeah, right. Not then. But she came over, and she sat down, and she started talking to me, you know, and she... My husband had called her. He was working for Goldsmith Brothers in New York, and that was in Manhattan. I'm out on the island on Rockaway. So she said, oh, your husband called. I said, he wanted to know if you were going into New York today. He was to, especially to my aunt's house. She lived in the village, my mother's sister. So I said, no. I said, I really, you know, hadn't planned to go today. Because Pam was a baby then. She was almost a year old. And she chatted a little while. And then, but when she said, when she first came and she said, my husband called, I said, was it about my father? And so she didn't know what to say. And then, you know, she just went on. Then she went back to her place. Then a little while later, she came back. And I don't know, just something in her face, just so I said, was it about my father? And then she just shook her head, you know. Because my father and I were very close. I mean, I would visit him as much as I could, you know, especially having a young baby and all. He never got to see Pam. And so he died, and that was in 49. And that we took care of that. I had a half-sister, his daughter, by a previous relationship. She was there. And we took care of the arrangements and everything. And but I stayed on in New York, and I worked, and my husband worked, and
had three more children.
Yeah, had three more children.
And the last one was born here.
Yes, she was born here, 56.
56. And where did you move when you came back here?
Moved to Gilmer Avenue, yeah. 1000 block of Gilmer.
Okay. 1026.
Mm-hmm. 1026 Gilmer.
Gilmer.
Okay.
We lived there. And then when we left there, after a few years, it was an apartment that we had there. Then we moved to 2130 Hanover. Okay. That's been 50 some years ago.
Now, did you have a front porch?
At Gilmer?
Mm-hmm.
No.
On Hanover?
No. On Hanover, oh, you have a nice front porch on Hanover with a Ritz with a swing on it.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Did you have the neighbors come by and you sit out there and drink iced tea? And?
No.
No?
The neighbors, we had a next door neighbor, but they had dogs. Mm-hmm. They weren't really neighborly, because one summer when I'd gone back to New York with the children, I mean, well, they followed me like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. I mean, I went back to New York, and that's when I worked for the draft board.
You went back to New York, you were 45, and that's when you, your first job was, that's where you met Percy.
Oh, and I worked for a parking garage. You know, I would give them the tickets and that type of thing. At this parking garage. And then I got a job at the Eastman Kodak Company. Okay. And that was, lasted for 14 years.
But the reason that the people weren't very neighborly was that we were one of the first black families to move into the neighborhood.
Okay. That's what I wanted
yeah,
to know.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
True.
So there was only one other black family when we moved there in 63, I think it was.
Somewhere around there, I think.
Okay.
So.
So did you enjoy your front porch?
Oh, yes. Yes, I've always enjoyed it.
With the
a nice backyard too, and nice front yard also. My husband planted trees. He loved to be outside gardening. Mm-hmm. He planted trees, and I just had to have the big pine tree cut down because it was encroaching on the electric wires, the cable wires, and the telephone wires, and the house, the roof of the house. So it was cut down 2 weeks ago, but it grew to great proportions. When my husband planted it, he thought it would be like a normal size tree, but it wasn't. It just grew and grew and grew. But I had to get rid of it.
Okay.
Yes.
And the house was $8,000.
When you purchased your house, it was
$8,500.
$8,500. Oh my gosh. And how many rooms did it have? Was it a big house or was it a small house?
It's It has a full attic, the one's the length of the house, and that was a children's space when they were growing up. Then Pam had her room. My husband and I had our room. Then we had a den and a living room and the kitchen, because I knew it only had one bath.
One bath with all those women
mm-hmm.
and girls.
But we managed to manage it very well, and we didn't have central heat. The first year we were there, the furnace went out. So then my husband got a gas heat roller. And that was in the den. And but the children were never sick. You know, I mean, they would run down in the morning to get ready to school, and they'd go around by the stove, and they didn't complain much, really. I mean, I think they were good children, because some children would have been whiny, but they weren't like that. They would come on down and get bathed and dressed and have their breakfast and go on to school.
We just complained about the oatmeal. My dad would make it with lumps in it.
He had oatmeal every day of his life. He would cook oatmeal for himself. I never had to cook breakfast for my husband. He would always just cook for himself. And he never wanted me to get up and fix breakfast for him. Mm-hmm. And he would fix his breakfast, and oatmeal was what he had.
Now, when he was in the service, which branch of service was he
in? He was in the medical, he was a medical corpsman. And it was Army.
Okay.
And then when he went to, the first year we were married, we went to live in Alabama. And that was during real segregation. Cortland, Alabama, they had an Air Force base there. And we went down to live there, and we lived in this little lady's little farmhouse-like. Very primitive. You had to draw water from the well. And her stove was very antiquated. But I would cook. There were two other veterans and their wives who lived in the same house with us. And we got to know them quite well. And I would cook, and then I would say to my husband, I knew it was terrible, because see, I grew up having this wonderful food from my mother. And I would cook the stuff. And I'd say, honey, how did you like that? And he would say, it was different. Today the man will throw it all over your face and everything, I'm afraid. But he was very diplomatic. He would say, it was different. And I knew it was horrible. I mean, you know, I knew that. And then we would go into another town to play bridge. I learned to play bridge by then, he did, and we would go there. But one time when we were leaving the base, we didn't live on the base, but we'd have to get the bus at the base to go into Decatur, Alabama. That's where we would go on Wednesday. And this particular time, the bus was there and everything. I got ready to step up on the bus, and the driver, this old white cracker, said, step back, get back. And I said, well, you know. And he said, let the whites on first. Now, we're all in uniform. Me and my husband's in the uniform, and all these fellows, you know. So one fellow, a white fellow, said, what did he say? I said, he said, let the whites on first. He was from, he's a little northerner. And he just shook his head in disgust, you know. But that's how it was then. I mean, it was not good. We had our share of the racism, overt and otherwise. But that's what we would do. And I know one time we went into Decatur, it was bitter cold. It was bitter cold in the place where we were, you know. Oh, we almost froze. Don't tell me it does not get cold in Alabama. It's not the sunny side. It was really cold. And when I first went down to, we stopped in Birmingham, the name of the people where we were staying, the last name was Love. And I got very sick. I got a very extreme case of diarrhea, I think from, I don't know from what. But anyway, the lady there, Catherine Love, the matriarch of the family there, she had me lick salt, black pepper, and soda, I think, to stop the diarrhea. But that's what it had to do.
Did it work?
It worked. Yeah, it sure did. It's distasteful as it was, but it worked.
Okay. When you came back to Roanoke, which businesses did you frequent?
I'm not watching that. Which businesses? Mm-hmm. You mean like grocery stores?
Grocery stores. Clothing stores. Could you go downtown?
Yes. I had him an account at a men's clothing store downtown, and I had the girls' accounts at some store. I forget the name of it. That was downtown. But there was Cress's, SH Cress. There was Woolworth. There was Grant. All of those. There was a grand piano. But at that time, the Cress and Grant and Woolworths, the water fountain said white and colored. Yeah, we experienced that too, white and colored, and so ridiculous. And of course the movie theater, we had the Virginia Theater that we could go to. And they had that other theater where you had to sit way up in the balcony. I forget the name of it. Is it there? I forget, but anyway, It has not always been pleasant being an African American. Well, not even in New York, as I said before. I mean, one would think that there it wouldn't have been that way. But I mean, we had so many rejections trying to find an apartment there that was really not good. But we lived on the Lower East Side in New York. And with the Hasidic Jews, with the men where they wore the long beards and the women wore the wigs. And when I lived in this 14-story apartment building, at Lillian Wald apartment building, brand new and everything, we lived on the second floor. And there was a Jewish family who had the apartment right there. But, you know, on Friday, after sundown, everything is shut up. They can't they can't push an elevator button. They can't do anything like that. So I would have to push the button for her to get on the elevator with her child in the carriage, you know, in the stroller. Very, very Orthodox Jews lived in that area. But we never experienced any real anything untoward from them. But that was an interesting experience.
What is your fondest memory of childhood, your childhood?
Oh, I think school. I love school because I would have gone all the time. I didn't have to stop for the summer. But I just really enjoyed going to school, and I enjoyed reading and going to the library and getting 6 and 7 books at a time. And I read all the fairy tales.
Were you able to come to the Gainsborough Branch Library? Or was it your school library?
It was. It had to have been the Gainsborough one, because I didn't know of any other one at that time. And I would check out 6 and 7 books at a time, read them all, get them back. And we walked, of course. We didn't have transportation. We didn't have a car, so I've walked all over Roanoke, I think. And when Kennedy died, I was over on Franklin Road. And I used to go over in the evenings to fix dinner for this Jewish family, just she and her husband. And the fellow who was a handyman there, or porter, came, knocked on the door and said that President Kennedy had been shot. And then a little later they said he was dead. Oh my gosh, I thought my heart would just break. I was so upset. I couldn't even get on the bus to go home. I walked from Franklin Road all the way over to Hanover Avenue. I could not get on the bus. And I got home and I told my husband, I said, they killed our president. That was the saddest thing. I just felt like he was one of the family, you know. And I tell you, I shed many tears for that, after that happened, many tears. I thought it was so sad. But I've enjoyed being a mother, a grandmother, a great-grandmother, you know. I've done it all. I've been there and done that.
Okay.
Yes. It's been a wonderful experience. I have no real regrets.
When you were able to take vacation, where did you go? When you lived in Roanoke.
I think we probably hit most of the state parks. We went to just about all of them.
Did you pack a picnic lunch?
Oh yes, sometimes, and sometimes we'd buy stuff that they would have there, but yeah, we would pack and go, and they always liked to go where there was water, you know, so that we'd go swimming, and they would ride the little boats and things that they would have out there. And I think the kids really enjoyed that. I mean, we don't know. My husband was saying maybe just a few years ago that he doesn't know how we did all of that, because where did the money come from, you know? But gas was cheap then. We always had a car. I mean, you know, around our older years, we had a car always. And we would just get in there and go. Then when my husband was 70, he had double heart bypass surgery down in North Carolina. The VA in Salem was not doing it at that time. So he had to go down to North Carolina and have it done. And David went with me down there. that was a sad experience because the way they had him all hooked up and everything, you know, that was a very traumatic experience. But he did really well from that, very well.
Yeah, because he got out of breath just knocking snow off the windshield.
Yeah.
So he had that blockage.
Mm-hmm. It was almost completely blocked. So he had to have it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he said that he would never go again and have it done. But he never had to go again. But he really did very well after that, to be at that age, you know. And he didn't have to take nitroglycerin or anything like that, or any of the heart medications that a lot of people take after they have heart bypass surgery. He didn't have to do that.
When you were living in Roanoke, who were some of the community leaders? Do you remember any of the leaders?
Well, no, Reverend Taylor, Noel C. was one of them. I remember Mr. Lee, you know, W.A. Lee. Of course, Reverend James, he was considered a foremost leader, I think, at the time. And
Clater.
Yeah, all the doctors Clater, the dentists and all, they were very prominent in Roanoke. They were the upper class, upper echelon. But and some of the teachers were in my school history were very memorable. My French teacher, what's her name? She was such a good teacher. And her name has slipped my mind completely. You remember any French teacher here?
The only teacher I remember was Lawson Poindexter.
Eunice? Oh yeah, I know Eunice well.
I remember hearing them talk about her.
And Sadie V.
Sadie V.
Oh
yes.
Yeah, Sadie V. No, it was my French teacher's name. Because she would come in a tansioma class. And
you remember some of your French?
I remember a little bit of French. Because they didn't offer Spanish at that time. It was only French that you could take. And Mr. Sidnor, mm-hmm. I remember it well. He just lost his daughter. I mean, she just passed away recently. Mm-hmm. I knew her too. And
were your teachers your role models, or did you have a special?
Yeah, they were role models. Some, you know, more fond of than others. Alta Mae Thompson was my French teacher. Yes. Okay. She was right on the money all the time. I mean, she didn't take any nonsense. And you had to really learn in her class. Some other teachers, they just didn't have it. They just couldn't cut it. Not with me, you know. Because I know I went home one time and I told my mother that the teacher mispronounced M-E-R-I-N-G-U-E. She called it Mary New. Of course, it's meringue. I was appalled. I'm a stickler for good English. I mean, I really am, you know, and I taught my children that. And they appreciate that because they're glad that I insisted, even on vacation, and they wanted to get lax, you know. I said, no, you don't get lax. You speak good English all the time. All the time. So I think they all appreciated that.
What other jobs were available when you were here in Roanoke?
Well, when I came back, I worked at the VA regional office. I worked for the government again, the VA regional office. And I was there in several different areas. Mm-hmm. One area I had to request to get out of because it was too sad to work in that area. There were too many death certificates you had to deal with, you know, with the veterans. And so I got out of that and I went to another part of it. But it was all downtown on Campbell Avenue at that time. I enjoyed that a lot. What's his name? I really liked him a lot. I worked for a banker once when I was about 13, maybe 14 years old. He was the president of the First National Bank, Thomas Worsing Jr. Used to work for them. His wife was Esther Worsing. And when I went to work there, she was pregnant. I didn't know what pregnancy was. I was very naive.
Was that here in Rhode Island?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Her stomach was way out, and I came home and told my mother, you know, that she had this big stomach. She had a baby while I was working for them, Emily. Emily's dead now, too. She was a very noted artist here in Roanoke, Emily Worsing. But I used to go out and work for the Worsings, and I know one time they had pheasants. You had to pluck them, and I'm plucking the feathers off, and the tears are streaming down. Just, you know, I was always a very sensitive. And another time, I opened a can of milk there. It was condensed milk. I had never seen it before. I thought it was bad, thrown away. I threw it away, you know, and so Ms. Rissy needed it for something. She asked me, and I said, oh, yeah. I said, it wasn't any good. So she said, oh, no. She said, that's just a special kind of milk. She's a very sweet lady. She was so sweet. Got killed in a car accident. And when I came back to Roanoke, one time I made it a point to go and visit Mr. Worsing. He had remarried. He'd married another lady. So I went out to visit him in South Roanoke, and he said, I often wonder what happened to that cute little girl that used to help us out, you know, because I've grown now, you know, and children of my own and everything. But they had me, had tea for me, you know, and everything. He's dead now, too. Yeah, so many of them. And his second wife, too. Mm-hmm. But just a lot of fond memories. And then I worked for the General Rawson. He was a four-star general. I worked for them, he and his wife and their children. But she was not married to him at that time. She was married to another man and had children by him. But General Rawson died a couple of years ago. And she and I, we still keep in touch. She'll call me sometimes, I'll call her.
You worked briefly at Burrell too, didn't you?
Oh yes, I worked at Burrell. When it was Burrell, I was a ward clerk. And that was very distressing because the nurses, they just ignored the patients so much, you know. I mean, they'd ring and they, well, what do they want now? What does she want now? And I would think, why are you in this position if you don't want to take care of these people who are here because they're sick? So I would go in and I would take them water. I'd fill their water bottles, or if they needed a bedpan, I'd handle them. I wasn't my job, but I was just so, would get so upset because they wouldn't get up off their rears and go and see what they wanted. You know, they had to be ringing for a reason. So one day I said, no, I had hysterics at the elevator as I was getting ready to go home. I just had hysterics because I was so upset about how they were treating the people, you know. And I've seen that because I've been a caregiver for 5 years for a home instead senior care. I gave that up when my husband got ill. I didn't work at all in 2007. So I just went back yesterday for orientation. They want to have me back. And I was there from 9:30 It's almost four yesterday for orientation.
So you're going back to work?
Yeah, they put me back on their roster, on the active roster. So whenever they call me, you know, I told them the days I would be available and the time span that I would be available. Because for the first year I worked for them, that was in 2001. That's when they first started their franchise. Betsy and Chris Head, they're the owners. And I was caregiver of the month and caregiver of the year in 2001. So whenever they have the caregiver of the year luncheons, they always invite me to come. So I've worked all over with that. I mean, I've gone all over Warren, Oakland, even as far as Blacksburg with them. I was telling my friend this today that I had gone to Blacksburg a couple of times, you know, with Home Instead. I said, but they don't pay your mileage going to and from your job. David worked for Home Instead too. In fact, David worked for Home Instead. His wife worked for Home Instead. My sister, my niece, and my daughter. We all worked for Home Instead at one time. I'm the only one who still works for them now.
What niece?
Wasn't it Tanya? Did she ever work for Home Instead? No?
She worked at RPS.
Oh, okay. Okay, sorry about that. Yes, she worked at RPS. I worked at RPS too, telemarketing, yes. So I've done quite a number of things, have a variety of things that I did. I taught myself on the Wang computer. I did what's that other thing we did? That funny looking, I don't guess they even have that anymore, but you did that too.
Computer?
No. What is it it's called? I can't remember the name of it, but I taught myself that also.
Oh, okay.
They put you in a room and then just let you go and teach yourself. And I used to do teletype. Okay. And it's been interesting. I've enjoyed it. I've had a good ride, really.
I certainly have enjoyed listening to you. Lulu, thank you. Thank you so much for this interview. Now, is there anything that you want to tell me that you have not told me in this hour that we've been talking?
I just recently finished 20 weeks of learning to play the keyboard at this place near
Right
Tyrus,
Now.
Right Now Music.
Right Now.
Really?
Yes. She bought them.
I have a Yamaha.
Yamaha. Maybe Bob Hale can give her some lessons, huh?
You're right.
So will you come down to one of our cafe nights and play for us?
Sure.
Oh, well. I'll keep you in mind.
Do the best I can do. I'm just doing it for my own edification. You know, I mean, I didn't want to learn all this music stuff and everything. I put the colors on the notes, you know. And then I have the books, and they have the same colors there. Well, it's just like all the organs over at Weidenauer, they have the keys are color-coded, and they can play beautifully over there. But I didn't go sign up for another 10 weeks, because they're really trying to get you to buy an organ. But I'm not buying an organ. And most of the lessons from here on in are going to be organ generated, you know, and so I didn't feel the necessity for going back again. But I've enjoyed that. I mean, I'll sit and play and tell my husband I'm playing, and I hope he enjoys it, you know. I talk to him sometimes. Mm-hmm. I talk to him every day. I mean, when I'm leaving the house, I tell him I'm leaving, you know. And it's just like he's there, you know. I mean, he is there. He's a part of it. He's a part of the house. He loved the house. He loved the yard and everything. So I just keep him there.
Okay. Thank you. David?
I don't have anything to add. I'll just come at a different time and...
So I will call you at a different time and we'll get your interview, but thank you so much. And thanks for coming with your mom.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, okay. Thank you.